Welcome to Long Story Long. I'm your host, Lisa Curry. Today's guest is the lovely comedy person and drummer for Motion City Soundtrack, Tony Thaxton. This was a fun conversation. You're going to love it. Here you go.
Hey, Tony, how are you?
I'm doing all right. Thank you for having me. Good to see you.
Yeah, thanks for being here. Good to see you, too. I love that you have artwork in the background. And not, this is, you know, a podcast, so it's audio. So nobody will see that. But, you know, most people have just like a blank wall or a sheet or something.
Yeah, I've been surprised at how, I mean, I didn't do this for a Zoom background, but I know some people have done they're like, they have a special spot for their Zoom, and then people like are just like nothing. I'm like, you didn't put like any thought into where you sit for this, at least?
Nothing.
Like, yeah, come on.
My psychiatrist always has a different background, and like sometimes it's the one where it's like the beach with like the tree swing, and I'm like, can you not? Please.
Yeah, that's a weird move for the psychiatrist. That's a weird move.
I'm trying to tell you about, you know, averting a mental breakdown. So if you could not look like you're on vacation, that would be better for me.
Yeah, that's it. Wow. Wow.
Yeah, it's a weird one. So where are you from?
I am from originally, I've lived a few places, but I originally grew up in a very small town in Michigan. Called Edwardsburg. It's It is right on the Michigan-Indiana state line. Like it's not.
Oh, wow. Okay.
It's not. It's not the most exciting place. The closest thing that anyone would know what it is we lived very close to Notre Dame. Notre Dame was like 20 minutes from where we lived.
Oh, so you were you were like East Indiana. I guess. I mean, not like you weren't in Indiana, but I was, for some reason, I was picturing Michigan where Wisconsin is. That's not correct.
I mean, you're not crazy far off. You know, you just got to go on the other side of the lake. But
that's funny. I'm from a really small town in Northwest Indiana. So we were probably like 2 hours apart.
Oh, yeah.
Same vibe. Same vibe, I'm sure.
What city are you from?
Cedar Lake.
Okay. Yeah, I don't
know. It's near Crown Point, Merrillville. Sherville,
okay, Calvary, I know Merrillville. You know. Yes, I remember. What is it? Was it the Starlight Theater? Is that what that's
Star
called?
Star Plaza? Yeah, I saw All for One there. That was my first concert, not my favorite concert.
I saw the Monkees there a couple times.
Stop it.
When I was very young. Yeah.
More than once?
Yeah. I think I saw them. I saw them 3 times total, and I think two of them were at that place.
I wouldn't have guessed their manager has seen them 3 times. I mean, that's a lot of commitment
but
to the Monkees.
All like, you know, 9-year-old Tony was all about it.
That's amazing. Are you 100 years old? wait, so how did when you were a kid, did you know you wanted to get into music? Was this like a lifelong dream for you?
Yeah, kind of. I think when I was young, I don't know that I necessarily thought that far ahead with it. Mm-hmm. I just knew that I enjoyed it and I liked playing drums because my dad plays drums. And so I just was kind of around growing up. He was just in like a cover band, but he was like always playing out on the weekends
like
and stuff.
Touring VFWs and stuff.
Yeah, touring, yes, air quotes. Yeah, maybe they might, you know, occasionally do something that was 40 minutes away every now and then, you know.
Ooh.
Maybe. Yeah, that's right.
I mean, that is really cool, though. I'm always a little jealous of people whose parents are creative because, like, mine are the farthest opposite away from that. Like, I wouldn't even say mine have even an appreciation for comedy or music or anything. They're just kind of like, yeah, that's something that exists.
Wow. You know? I'm always blown away by that. Like, so, like, there's not even, like, music they're into.
Yeah, my mom claims she's a big music fan, and in my life, I've never heard her deliberately listen to music. Not once. it's only been by accident that she's heard a song, to my memory.
Yeah, that always blows me away. I mean, I understand, you know, different people like different things, and I don't know. It's weird to, like, because, like, everybody at least listens to some music, obviously.
Some.
But, like,
Gregorian chants, at least.
Right. But it's weird to, I don't know. I can understand maybe not to the obsessive level of getting into something. But, like, you know, you'd think you'd still, like, oh, even if you're saying Celine Dion is my favorite. Yeah. Or, you know, you'd think you'd have some sort of favorite. Yeah.
Someone. Yeah. Is your mother creative as well?
No. And I don't even, now it sounds like I'm just slamming them, but like, I don't even know that I necessarily say my, because, you know, my dad was in a cover band. So like, does that count as creative?
I think that's really cool. I think that's a lot of fun. I like, it might be harder to learn. I mean, for me, I'm like, it could be harder to learn other songs because like, if you write your own song and you mess it up, nobody knows.
Right.
We don't know.
Right. I think that's...
That's what jazz is. Just making it up. They don't know what they're doing.
Right. Yeah, I think I would agree with that in a lot of cases, but I do think drums are at least easier to like kind of bullshit your way through.
Sure. Yeah.
Like if you kind of know how the song goes, you can usually at least kind of get through it. Yeah.
Yeah. If you miss a note, it feels like, or no, that's not a note. If you miss a beat, it feels like the bass will fill in or whatever. Wait, so when did you start playing? Were you a kid?
Yeah. Like I literally can't remember not playing.
Oh, wow. So an infant.
Yeah. Like literally like being very young and having like a little kid, you know, basically a toy drum set that then, you know, as I got a little older, then it would get a slightly bigger kit that was more real. So yeah, I was always at least playing, and it started out just sort of, you know, being young and just hitting them and not knowing what I was doing. And then I was never, or at least in my younger days, I was never like, my dad didn't teach me how to play or any, and I didn't take lessons until much later.
That's really
in life.
Surprising. That was going to be my next question. Your dad was just like, he'll figure it out, whatever.
I don't know. I've never really asked him about that, but yeah, I have no memory of him ever like sitting me down and showing me things. I think I just sort of like picked up on it from
maybe he
from
was
watching.
Like already jealous of you, like you had your toy set and he's like, damn it, I'll never be that good.
Yeah, it was, I think just, again, like, he was always playing, and I didn't, not that I was, like, going to see him play that often, because a lot of times it would just be bars or something, but, like, when I could go, you know, I would go, and just, I think just over time just sort of picked up on it, and I was just into music aside from that, and I think just watching TV, like what, you know, MTV huge back then.
Oh,
because
yeah.
I'm 100 years old and
same.
So I would just sort of, you know, without like thinking I was kind of studying these things, I guess I was.
That's really cool. When did you like start taking it really seriously?
Well, I had a weird period where I got to, you know, as I got older, I outgrew the little drums that I had. And then my dad was always playing on the weekends, so he never really, like, even had his drums at home. Because they would just, like, keep all their stuff together and somebody else brought his drums to the things.
And your mom was like, keep that shit out of my house, probably.
Drums are terrible. I love drums, but they're also the worst. Like, there's no quiet way about them. Yeah, terrible. So like I had a period where of years where I wasn't really playing. And then when the summer after eighth grade, my family moved to Richmond, Virginia. And so when we did that, you know, his drums came with us and he was no longer in a cover band. So I got to just have the drums at the house. And then, so I started, had just moved there, didn't have any friends or anything. Right. So I was just playing drums a lot. So I started like getting way more into it then. Mm-hmm. And then, crazily, literally the first friend that I made at my new school, freshman year of high school first of all, it's disgusting that, I had the realization that next year that will be 30 years ago.
Oh my goodness.
My first friend, still my best friend and my bass player bandmate in Motion City Soundtrack.
Oh, that's really cool. Yeah. I love that. Wait, I'm assuming your dad is like really stoked on your career.
Yeah, my parents were always very supportive of it. Yeah.
That's awesome. So they were never like, get a real job. I feel like that's such a everybody's parents, even people that are like killing it right out of the gate, their parents are like, I don't know about this.
Yeah, I never really like got any of those talks. There was never even like a, I don't remember any sort of are you sure about this? Is really what you want to do? It was just sort of, because I think at first I didn't really know, because I don't know, you, mm-hmm. I think in those teenage years, I'm like, God, it would be so cool to be in a band and go on tour and,
yeah.
Oh, but like, I didn't really think that was a real option. Like, it seemed so far-fetched and everything. But then I started playing in bands and just, I don't know, got very into it and then started just playing out more and more and started, you know, going out of town a little bit. Mm-hmm. And it just sort of like, I don't know, it just stuck. And I was like, this is kind of what I do. And I briefly went to college just for like a year as a music major.
What did you study?
Music.
Oh, okay.
But I very quickly, you know, I was having to study, I was technically a classical percussion major, is what I was going to do. And I very quickly was like, this is not me. Like,
it's too much. All of that stuff is like, that's not what, because I was on my way to art school and I'm like, well, I don't want to study everything.
Yeah.
I don't want to know about every painting that's in a museum. I want to do my own thing.
Yeah. Yeah, because I was just like, I'm a rock drummer. Like, I'm not trying to fool myself into thinking I'm this, like, percussionist playing marimba with four mallets and all this crazy stuff like that. Like, it just wasn't me. And I just didn't have a ton of experience with that stuff either. So I was just not that comfortable with that world. And it was not enjoyable to me at all. So I stopped and then I just was kind of working normal jobs for a little bit and then trying to do the band things. And
what was your first band that you were in?
That started in high school, and lasted well beyond high school, actually. For most of the time we were called Submerge, which is not a good
name.
Everybody thought we were like a crazy, like hardcore band or something, but we weren't. Mm-hmm. The name didn't fit very well.
It does, like, Submerge is right in the same kind of sphere of, like, drown.
Oh boy. Yeah, definitely not in that world. And it would, like, predate a lot of that stuff, too. There was a few different names. Our first show we ever played was my junior year of high school. And the first show we played was under the name Ludicrous Speed, which is a Spaceballs reference for anybody that doesn't know that. So we just kept doing that and started playing more and more. And then we kept playing until 2000 is when we ended up breaking up. And we even, I guess it was 2001 technically when we broke up. Because in 2000 mm-hmm. we started then doing a lot more and we were going out on our own, doing small tours, like go out for like 2 or 3 weeks and just, you know.
Oh, that's really cool. And was it mostly like East Coast gigs then?
East Coast, and we did some Midwest as well. I think we went out like 3 or 4 different times. And, you know, those like super early play anywhere you can, you know. Definitely remember playing somebody's kitchen, before like those types of things. Yeah.
Those are the most painful gigs too. Yeah. When you're out there and you're like, yay, I'm doing it. And then you wind up in somebody's fucking living room and you're like, what is happening?
Yep. But yet there's still,
why am I here?
I know it's like miserable, but also fun. Like it's somehow still like really exciting at the same time when you're, you know, you're like 20 years old or whatever at the time.
Yeah.
So to do that
when you're
now
approaching 40, it's not as fun.
Yeah. When I'm approaching 40. Yeah.
I'm saying like, that's like the cutoff, you know, when you're in your 30s. And I feel like we all have these like fake milestones that really don't apply to the arts where we're like, by the time I'm 30, I'm not doing these kind of gigs anymore. By the time I'm 40, I'm not doing these kind of gigs anymore. And it's all of it is nonsense. It's all just in our heads.
Yeah.
What was that initial touring like? Was that really thrilling or did you find that difficult? I mean, that's got to be hard with a whole ass drum kit you're dragging around.
Yeah. I mean, all equipment is terrible to lug around and drums are definitely the worst of it all. But yeah, like I said, it was still exciting though. I do remember on that first tour we did, we literally, one of the guys in the band, I don't remember if it was his parents or if it was actually his, but he had a minivan and we literally just did it in a minivan and had one of those car top carriers.
I love it.
And so I think we just would put like our luggage up there, and then all the gear would go in the back of the van. And you know, it was fun, but a lot of terrible shows with a couple okay ones mixed in. And I definitely remember the AC breaking while we were in Florida in July.
Amazing. So of that course was it great. Did.
Yeah. yeah. So it, you know, it's that combination of it sucks, but it's also great. And yeah. And then we continued doing that for a few more months, and then I think it was on our second tour that we ever did. We played a show in Milton, Pennsylvania.
Mm-hmm.
And we met the then early lineup of Motion City Soundtrack, and it was their first tour ever. And
oh, that's really cool. Were they Motion City Soundtrack at the time?
Yes, but it was just the two guitar players that are still there. It was just them with a different bass player and a different drummer. They were just mm-hmm. four piece at the time. And so we kind of kept in touch after that, and like when they would come on tour again onto the East Coast, we'd help them out with shows. We went to the Midwest, they helped us out with some shows. And then, you know, fast forward a couple months later, our band ended up breaking up. Our band ends up breaking up. And their drummer that ends up quitting. There's more to it. Eventually, I was asked to join, and I said yes. Because there was a time I was asked, said yes, and then literally hung up the phone and had this sinking feeling in my gut. I was like, I don't know if I really do want to do this.
Oh, no. Why is that? I mean, was that feeling at the time? You were just, was it just like scary to leap into that?
I really don't know. Have you ever had those feelings where you just get this gut feeling and you're like, I don't know why, but this just feels like I shouldn't do this right now.
Everything I do every day, and I just proceed.
Right. Yeah, I think
a lot
of times
I'm describing all the decisions I make. I'm like, this is terrible. Let's keep going.
Right. It. I think it just. I don't know what it was, but it was just this feeling, and I think it really was. And looking back on it, I'm really glad, because I think the timing just wasn't quite right.
Yeah,
because so fast forward a year after me saying yes and then immediately saying no.
So you did say no.
Yeah, like I hung up the phone and was like, oh, shit. And then ended up saying, yeah, I actually.
Okay, so at this time, when you say yes initially, their drummer's gone. All right.
Yes, their drummer.
Or are they like, we're shopping around?
No, well, it gets to that. Mm-hmm. So their drummer had left. And so then I say no. And then they continue and they get a new drummer. They're doing their thing. And fast forward like almost exactly a year later, pretty much the same thing happens. This was back in the old instant messenger days. And I remember up late at night.
Excellent.
Talking to Josh, the guitar player. And I just sort of, I was in a different place by then. For some, I had been working this shitty warehouse job and mm-hmm. just kind of was like, felt like I was doing nothing.
And which is what you said, why you said no, because you were like, I got to keep my schedule open for the warehouse job.
Exactly. I got to move those pallets. So I was just like, I just sort of half jokingly was like, well, if you ever end up needing a drummer again, I would do it this time. Mm-hmm. And he was like, wait, really? And so I ended up joining, and right at the same time I joined, they had befriended this guy, Jesse, who's our keyboard player now. Mm-hmm. He joined at the same time I did, because Justin, our singer/guitarist, used to also play the keyboard a little bit, and he used to kind of pull triple duty, I guess. So we were like, all right, we'll just give the keyboards to one person. And then, you know, I join and like, literally weeks after I joined, we recorded our first record, and then
oh wow, like, that's really fast. Was that like, did that feel like a lot of pressure to hurry up and learn the songs, or
a little bit? But I didn't feel pressured, though. It was just sort of like, yeah, this is what I do. And again, I think it's mm-hmm. much easier to drums, I feel like, are easier to jump in and mm-hmm. just do it. And I feel like I can usually learn stuff kind of quickly on drums. And plus, we wrote a couple new things right away. And this was like, this wasn't like, this ended up being the record that got released as our first record. But in mm-hmm. this phase, we were just, we just did it. Like, it was fun. You know, the band paid for it all, like, to be recorded. It wasn't a label giving us money or anything.
Right.
So yeah, we did that and continued touring a little bit, and then quickly our bass player was just not really working out, is the mm-hmm. quickest, easiest way to put it. And then I mentioned this to Matt, my best friend, and was in the old band with me.
Uh-huh.
And he was kind of in a weird spot at that moment too, and he was like,
also moving pallets.
Yeah. For a living. I think he, what was he doing? The equivalent of that, basically. Yeah. And so he, and was very similar thing where he was like, well, I would do it if you need a bass player. I was like, wait, really? Because I didn't think he, I thought he was kind of like ready to move in a different direction. And like a week later, he was on his way to Minneapolis with me, which is where at the time everybody in the band was based there, except for he and I.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, and that ended up being like the final piece we really needed, because he brought a lot more to the table. Just like he's easily like the most talented overall in the band, of like that act, like knows what he's doing. Like, I feel
he
like
also
a lot
went
of
to college for music, technically.
Yes, he did. Yeah.
Oh, that's great. I was just making that up. That's really cool that you were able to pull somebody else from your old band. And it also sounds like, man, music sounds so nice and like laid back in a way, because I feel like, or at least the vibe between musicians, because I feel like comics, you know, it's more individualistic, but with comics, I cannot remember a time when anybody was ever like, yeah, I mean, if you need me for a spot, that's cool, I'll do the show. Like, people are usually like, give me a fucking spot. Right. I need to do a show.
Well, I think
like coming undone.
I think there's probably plenty of that also. You know, it just ends up being like the crowd you fall in with sometimes, I think. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I was just lucky that those tended to be the types of people I think that I hung out with and knew. But, you know, yeah, it's nice, but also you do the thing of, you know, it's the five of you then on tour, like in the early days, just the five of us, no one else with us, and, you know, crammed in a van. And while you like each other, you know, when you're together all day, every day,
it's a lot. Yeah. Yeah.
It you start to drive each other crazy here and there. And
yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I bet. I've been on the road with a couple other comics before, and I love them dearly, and you could not pay me enough to go on the road with them again, or anyone in that way. It's too much. And then to like play a show is exhausting, and the traveling is exhausting. And like, you know, I cannot imagine also like loading and unloading gear.
Oh yeah. Yeah. And like, and some nights you're barely sleeping after the show, because, or there were nights where the sleeping just happens in the van, kind of in shifts while somebody drives, because the drive is too long to go somewhere and sleep. Yeah. And so, yeah, you're just like brutal on yourselves, but you're like, this is what we chose to do, so here we go.
Yeah. Isn't it funny too how, and I'm sure this happens with you guys, because it certainly has happened to me, and I'm not well known. Isn't it funny how people like just assume that you're flying around in a jet all the time, or like you're taking all these crazy flights everywhere? I'm like, no, I'm in a car.
Yeah.
I'm driving. It's cost efficient.
I know. It's
not luxurious.
I know. And it blows people's mind. Either way, I feel like it blows people's minds though too, because then you even when you tell them that, they're like, wait, really? That's just like what you do? Like, yeah. Because I think it too, like, you start doing it so much and like it becomes normal to you. So then when you can say it to somebody without thinking twice about it, and then their reaction a lot of times is like, wait, how do you do that? What?
Yeah, you're like, we're not the Rolling Stones. So we don't have private jet money, but thank you.
Yes. Which will then, like, as the years progressed and we, you know, started doing better and eventually get to move to a tour bus, that then becomes the thing of like, anytime you're like at a hotel or even outside of the venue sometimes, somebody that wasn't going to the show that just happens to be passing by or something, you know, sees you step off the bus, like, whose bus is this? And like they're always and you could say anything and they're gonna believe you, and
it's literally anything. Yeah. This is the best thing when I this is completely unrelated, but I worked in Beverly Hills for a long time, and the tour buses would come through, you know, with all the tourists, and I mean multiple times I would see these drivers or hosts, or not the driver, it's not the driver doing it, there's somebody else, but they'll like just point to a random Jewish guy on the street and they're like, it's Adam Sandler, and everybody loses their minds, and I'm like, with your eyes closed, that doesn't look like Adam Sandler. What?
Yeah. I don't know what that is. Like there's just this like fame obsession that some people just like, that's all that matters is like, they think, this is a fame. Cause like our version of that would be, I can remember being on tour with or it wouldn't even necessarily have to be with another band. Like I can remember being at the airport, like flying to wherever, and somebody maybe on the flight recognized our singer. Like it did, you know, didn't happen a ton, but it would happen from time to time. And then so like they ask for an autograph or picture or whatever, and then other people see that happen, and then they're like, "Wait, who are you guys?" And then And then you tell them, and then they want a picture or you to sign something. Or sometimes they'll just do, like, I don't think we ever did this, but I definitely know guys at other bands that I witnessed that happen to, like somebody come up to them because they were near someone else that this person recognized. And then they ask them for their autograph, and the person just goes, "Who am I? Why do you want me to sign this? Who am I?" And they don't know. And they're just like, "I don't know." And they're like, "Well, why do you want me to sign it then?"
The best is when people get it wrong or mix it up. Man, one time, to go off on another tangent, just the phenomenon of people getting so excited about celebrity is years ago, I was waiting tables and this guy was waiting, I was like, "You look so familiar." And I'm like, I get that a lot, I think, because I have this like just kind of, you know, Polish face. I look like a lot of people. And he was like, you really look familiar. I was like, "Nah, I shouldn't look familiar. There's no reason I would look familiar." And he keeps going on. So finally, like, I make up this big lie to entertain myself. And I was like, "Oh, actually, you know what? You got me." I go, "I used to have a TV show and it got canceled and it sucks. And I don't like talking about it because I'm waiting tables now. It sucks." And he's like, "I knew it. I knew it." He's like, "I loved your show." And I'm like, this is the craziest. I'm like, I am lying to this guy. But it's like, what are you? It's also funny because like biologically, I'm not to like sound too cuckoo, but what? I don't understand what it is. What's going on in people's brains that hits something? Because I'm like, TV is not like a natural thing. Right. It doesn't naturally occur in the wild. So it doesn't make sense that our brains are like attached to it in that way. I don't get that is.
I know. And I'm always, even in that moment, after you're telling the guy, he doesn't, he thinks you're somebody else or something. But then you flip and say, "Yes, I had a show." And then he tells you love the show. Does he genuinely believe that, or is he trying to then cover for himself and make himself feel better?
I don't know.
Or make
what's
you feel
going
better?
On there.
Yeah, it's fascinating.
I have no idea. it's fascinating. It's a little scary.
Yeah,
because it's also like, you know, there's so many people say like, "Oh, celebrities shouldn't complain about being mobbed or whatever," and it's like, no, it's actually terrifying. Like, you know, if you read about like Beatlemania, and which I think is the funniest phenomenon that's ever occurred. I love Beatlemania, but you know, like Brian Epstein would be like, "No, it was terrifying."
I'm
like
sure, yeah.
like teenage girls would hide in closets and then pop. It's like, what the fuck is that?
And pay money to go see them and then just scream through. Like, you know, there's all those stories of you couldn't hear them. because all the girls were just screaming the whole time.
Screaming bloody murder. I actually have behind, and not that anyone can see this, but like behind my desk, I have my favorite photo from Beatlemania. Just like this probably 8-year-old girl bawling. She's hysterical with like a giant button that says, "I love Ringo." It's so funny to me. Like, what are you doing? Why? But- and also like the thought of like, girls like screaming like that over grown men is real weird.
Well, the crying definitely is the part I really don't get. Like, you know, I know everybody has their emotions work differently, and you know, I'm not knocking crying. I do plenty of it, but yeah, just like crying over seeing someone strangers. In person. Like, just at a distance, you're not going to speak to them. All you're doing is seeing them. And to have that get you to cry is crazy to me.
Embarrassingly, I cry at concerts, all concerts. I'm just always moved to tears. And, uh-huh. like, I saw the Rolling Stones a handful of years ago with a friend, and I just wept through the entire concert. But it wasn't, like, because Mick Jagger is in front of me. It was because I'm just, like, oh my God, I love this music so much. I can't, and yeah. I like break down. It's a really, I've lost friends over it. People have, I went to see Queen with Adam Lambert years ago, and the friend I went with never talked to me again after that because I cried hysterically for 2 hours or whatever.
Wow. To lose a friendship over that, that's intense.
Yeah, I think she was like, that's enough.
Well, like, you know, your explanation makes, maybe that was more what's going on with these people, and I just didn't think of it that way. I don't know. Yeah. But
who knows? Yeah. Who knows what it is? I do love it, though. I can't connect. Cannot get enough of Beatlemania. Wait, so I want to come back to your stuff because I keep going off topic. When did you realize, I mean, I know it's like, you know, you kind of, in any creative career, unless your parents are billionaires, you're like phasing out a day job and phasing in your dream job. Like, when did you realize like, oh, this is my career. I'm doing this.
I want to, it, you know,
or
it
started,
right? I have a second career these days, but it was kind of, I mean, it was definitely a progression. But I was in a weird scenario at first where that warehouse that I was working at was letting me come back. They gave me the title of occasional worker, not the title, but that's what they deemed me as. So like when I was in town,
If I'm working full time, I should be considered an occasional worker because right. That's how much I work.
Yeah, exactly. But basically, yeah, they would let me leave. And then when I was back, I still had a job. And I did that for maybe the first year, I think. Mm-hmm. But then that next year, we just started touring so much that I was like gone most of, like, I think those first couple of years we were seriously playing like 300 shows a year.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah.
And was this like, this is only one show a night, I assume?
Usually, but there were a few times we did more than one.
Oh my God, that's so exhausting. Was it all in the US?
In the early days, yeah. But yeah, and it wasn't necessarily that we were making tons, well, we never made tons of money, but I mean, even at that point, you know, I don't even think we were making money technically. I think if we did come home a little bit ahead, you know, that was like an accomplishment. Yeah. That was kind of the goal in those days, was like, let's at least break even. Yeah. And so we were kind of accomplishing that, and it, you know, we were out so much that, you know, it was growing, like the every time we'd come back to the city, like, it would get a little bit bigger each time, you know, which is, that's what you hope for. That's kind of the goal. And then I was also, I was barely ever home anyways. Mm-hmm. And when I was, I would just still be at my parents' house. I was like, why pay rent when I'm gone?
Exactly. I think that so many people get caught up in like paying rent unnecessarily. 'Cause they're like, well, it's a thing you got to keep up appearances, and it's like, no, 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 no.
Yeah.
Don't bother.
And I did it for a long time. Like I got to a point where I was like, okay, I can't keep coming back to my parents' house. Like, they would have let me, but I was just like, I'm too old to still be doing this. And we're like starting to do better now, and I can afford to get a place now. So, but yeah, I think in like 2004 is probably when like things started noticeably going better. But like 2005 is definitely when things like kind of, that's when we put out our second record, and our second record like quickly was like exponentially more successful, and the crowds just like at that point like seemed like they were just getting bigger by the day, kind of.
That's really awesome.
Yeah, it was an like, exciting time.
I mean, that has to be so satisfying to be able to see in real time, because I'm like, well, I'll get 5 followers a week. But to like be able to like really watch your audience grow. Yeah, sounds really exciting.
It was really cool, because that summer of 2005. So I think the record had come out in like June, and then we were doing a lot of touring, and part of that was we were on not the entire thing, but a fair amount of Warped Tour that year, and it really was like every day the crowds were getting a little bit bigger, and you know, this was Jesus Christ, 16 years ago now, wow. Which. Again, 100 years old. but that was, you know, a different time. Yeah, even MTV at that point, you know, is not really doing videos anymore. But they would have, like, some shows still, like, in the middle of the night. Mm-hmm. And, like, Fuse was a big thing back then.
Oh,
and
yeah.
They were actually showing our videos. So that was, like, really helpful. So, yeah, there were some little things that I feel like don't really exist anymore that were happening back then that were really helping us along.
Yeah, that is a weird thing to be like, oh, I did this thing and it was a really cool marker. I weirdly, the first show I ever wrote for was on Fuse, if you can believe it.
What show?
This terrible show called Trivial Takedown. It was like a,
I feel like I vaguely remember that name.
I mean, if you do, I'm so sorry. I was so excited when it came out, and I bought the series on like Apple TV or whatever, because I was like, ooh, I'm gonna like pull the jokes that I wrote for like a joke reel. Yeah. And then I could not watch it. I was like, this is actually terrible. I'm actually gonna stop telling people I wrote on this.
Everybody's got those things though. It's exciting, and then okay.
Yeah, but it's exciting to the people on the tour, like, you know, tourists are still excited. You can tell them anything.
Exactly.
And they would be still thrilled out of their mind.
Yes.
What was there like a career milestone for you that like sticks out as like particularly exciting, or was there something that had been a goal of yours that you hit where you were like, oh fuck, I did it?
Yeah, there were kind of two that happened that summer. One was like not necessarily a goal, but it was just like a moment that I feel like I'll never forget. And I remember I almost started crying a little bit on stage while we're playing because I couldn't believe what was happening. Uh-huh. So it was Warped Tour in Chicago. And Chicago.
Wait, what year is this?
This was 2005.
Okay. I went to Warped Tour, but I think it was like 2001 or 2000, whatever. Whatever it was. Not that I was still in high school at that point. I was only 3 years old. I'm sorry. Continue. You were at Warped Tour 2005.
Yeah, and Chicago had always been like one of, if not the best city for us. Like, we would always have great crowds there. And so we were excited because things were really starting to pick up, and we're like, all right, and Chicago's coming now too. And then it was, so when you play Warped Tour, you don't know what time you're playing until that morning.
Oh,
because they mix it up every day. So like, you might play it 11 a.m. sometime, like you might be the first band up, or you might be the last band of the night. So like, I mean, there's times that our tour manager like woke us all up, like, get up, you're playing in an hour, you know, kind of thing. So this day we find out we're going on last, and we are on one of the side stages that year. It was like there were the two main stages, or no, sorry, a main stage. Was it two main? Jesus Christ, I can't remember anymore. Anyways, doesn't matter.
Whatever. There's always like 10 stages. Yes.
There's a main stage, and then there were like two side stages that were kind of, you know, the next step below the sides or the main stage. And in certain cities, like Chicago being one of them, they would put those two side stages in the amphitheater, and they would just sort of like split the stage in half. And so like band would play on one side, and then as soon as they're done, the next band starts on the other side. And so that's what we're going to be playing that day. Mm-hmm. But we find out we're going to be playing last. And last is usually kind of the worst spot for Warped Tour because a lot of people will leave before the day's done.
Oh, in Chicago, they're probably wasted by then.
And so the other thing, too, was Fall Out Boy was playing, I think, last on the main stage. And they're from Chicago. And this was also like right when they kind of had blown up.
Oh, there you go.
And so they were playing last on the main stage. But then when I say we were playing last, like we were literally the last band playing, period.
Oh, my goodness.
And so we thought like, this is going to suck. Like nobody's going to watch us. Like everybody's leaving. You know, Fall Out Boy will have quit, you know, be done playing by then. And so we thought, we're kind of bummed out, and then it finally feels like you're waiting an eternity to play that day. We finally, we're getting ready, and the amphitheater is like pretty full, and like as it's getting closer to showtime, it's just like getting more and more full. And I was like, why is this happening? And I do, I believe, if I remember right, I was told later too that Pete from Fall Out Boy, because we were friends with those guys, and and I think as they were done, I believe he was like, go watch Motion City Soundtrack on the blah 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 stage. And
I think that's great.
A lot of people did. And so by the time we started, like the amphitheater was like pretty much full, and like, which is already cool. It's like that's a shitload of people.
What venue in Chicago was this at?
Oh man. Whatever outdoor amphitheater is there. I can't remember what that's called.
Yeah, I'm like Tweeter Center, maybe?
Maybe? That sounds familiar. Yeah.
Could be. A lot sounds familiar anymore. I know.
So we start playing, and we just think like, oh, this is cool, and you know, maybe we'll win a lot of these people over or something. But then we start playing, and everybody is like losing their minds and singing along, and like...
Oh, I love that!
It was like, I mean, we'd had people singing along at the shows like, at that point, but this was like a massive crowd, and it was just like we hadn't experienced anything like that before. And so that was definitely like a moment that, you know, again, it just sort of happened. It wasn't like a one day we'll get to do this. That sort of just happened, and that was that's one of those things that will always stand out to me.
That's so cool.
But
and you were just weeping throughout.
I definitely remember a moment of kind of holding it back because, that was the other cool thing too, was, people that are on the tour, you know, will a lot of times like watch bands from the stage or whatever. And like, it also felt like the entire tour was standing on stage behind us watching. Like there were so many people just on stage watching. I don't know. It was like something in the air that night. It was it was insane.
Is that nerve wracking to watch other musicians watching you?
It can. I think for some people it is. I wouldn't say nerve wracking. I think sometimes if maybe I notice it, and it's somebody like I look, you know, respect something like that, then
that's the thing for me too. It's like anybody, I could perform in front of 90,000 people, I don't care, but like if somebody I really respect is there, I'm like, I'll puke.
I can still stay like, I don't start freaking out necessarily, but I will find myself like constantly looking over to see if they're still there, like that sort of thing, or just my mind keeps going and like thinking too much about that they're standing there watching. And so a little bit of that, but usually it's fine. But it usually just feels good. It's like, oh, your peers supporting you kind of thing.
Yeah. Did you guys ever have like a psychotic fan moment, like a Beatlemania situation?
No, nothing like that. There's some occasional people that can be a little pushy or something, but nothing. Yeah. For the most part, everybody's pretty cool.
That's good.
Yeah. But the other thing I was going to say, and I'll keep this shorter.
Oh, yeah.
But the...
You go for as long as you want.
But this was a moment that did make me cry. And it's like one of the only times in my life that I can remember actually crying from happiness. Is when I found out that... Because it was the same summer, like a month or two later, we found out we were going to play Conan.
Oh, that's awesome. Yeah.
And this was... 2000, so this was still NBC late night days, which is my favorite era of that show, and had been watching it and a huge fan for a long time. And so that was like a thing I always wanted to do, and as things were going better, like maybe that could happen. And then So when we found out that was happening, that was very exciting.
That's so cool. It feels like such a delicate balance to have goals and get excited about pursuing those goals, and then also, you know, doing work to mitigate disappointment because it's like, it might not work out, but you kind of, you have to like fully believe it's going to work out for it to happen. But then you also have to be like, okay, well, don't have a fucking breakdown if it doesn't happen.
I know. Yeah. That's kind of what I caught on to that kind of quickly, I think, in those early days, because so many of those shows in the early days are just so small and not great. So, and I often will like say this to like younger bands if they ask me about touring, it was like, expect those first tours to suck. Because they're probably going to. And like, so just like in my mind, I would just start like, I would just set the bar really low and just like little to no expectations of the show. And then that way, if only five people were there, it's like, yeah, all right.
That's so reasonable. I feel like every show I go to, I'm like, this is the one. This is going to change it all. Like, I have a spot tonight and I'm like, here we go. This is going to just change the whole trajectory of my career. And it's a psychotic way to live.
But, so at the same time, I support the positivity. Mm-hmm. And I think that's not a bad thing.
I think my brain, like, there's a part of me that just like gets high on the like endorphins that I'm feeding myself, that I'm like, here it comes. This is going to be the most exciting day ever. And I like buzz off of that. Yeah. And then, the come down is rough.
Well, even sometimes when it is great, like if you build it up so much, like it just, sometimes it's hard to live up to that.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Yeah. I was wondering too, how did you get connected to comedy and to Alison Rosen?
So I moved to LA in 2007, and then
with the band?
No, just me. Mm-hmm. We're all kind of all spread out now. And I'd always been a kind of a comedy nerd my whole life. And not right away when I moved here, but I think a couple years after I moved here, I started going to a lot of shows at UCB and then eventually like Meltdown and all of that. And just started going to tons of shows. And I can't even really think of what kicked the door into like sort of giving me that opening to kind of befriend. Actually, no, I do know what it was. Weirdly. So I was going to lots of shows and I was leaving town. I was at the Burbank Airport, having to fly to Vegas.
Where dreams come true.
Exactly. Hey, I'll take it over LAX in a heart. I will gladly take a layover.
I'd walk over going to LAX.
Like, oh, there's a layover? Sure, great. The layover's 4 hours long, but I still don't have to go out to LAX? Great. and I'm at the gate waiting for my flight, and Doug Benson comes walking up. And I had been to a lot of his shows, and my brain just did this dumb thing of, I saw him and my brain was like, oh, you know him. And I kind of like,
I do this all the time.
And I like started to like wave and I was like, oh, he doesn't know who I am. I know who he is. And I caught myself, but it was already like a little too late. And then I felt stupid. And then he like went and sat down and, you know, nobody was tired. So I just like, I was like, I'm not going to bother him, but I'll just like, I was like, felt like I should, who knows? He probably didn't even notice my half wave. But I was like, I'm gonna explain myself. And also, but I'll also like say, hey, I'm a fan. So I just wanted to say, hey, and I'm a fan. And so he did that. And then I ended up inviting him to our show. And then he actually came and hung out. And then
that's really great.
He then just like was like super cool and like kept in touch with me and then had invited me to do Douglas movies a few times and kind of through that then just started knowing a few more people and like just in through various podcasts like started meeting people. And then when Meltdown had become such a thing, when Jonah and Camille were doing that show, I was seriously there pretty much every Wednesday when they would do that show, and just ended up just from being there so much kind of befriending a lot of those people.
Yeah.
And then,
well, and I'm sure it was like probably they were probably excited to make friends with a musician instead of like, because it was, you know, so many comics, they're probably like, oh, here comes another comic, you know, where you're like, you're just like by default so much cooler being there.
You're generous, but I don't know. I don't know. It was just I just got along well with everyone and I liked hanging out with everybody. And that was just, there really was something special about that room and that night in particular that they would do that show. Just started doing it. And then also there was a weird period of time. I ended up leaving the band for a bit in 2013. And I really didn't know what I was going to do. I was really having some depression problems and things like that, and I just was like, I have to stop doing this for a little bit. I had no idea what I was going to do next, and I just, again, I was going there so much and started, I also was starting to kind of teach myself to how to record things at home, and but initially with the intention of like music stuff. And I started just because I was listening to so many podcasts and had so many comedian friends, I started doing this very dumb Christmas-themed podcast. and just would just have, you know, musician and comedian friends come on. And then I think from doing that, I think then a lot, some of these comedians then were like, oh, okay, this guy knows how to do this stuff. And then so in time, I started getting asked to record people's shows and all that. And it was very slow going. It took me several years for it to become like, okay, I guess this is what I do now. And I feel very lucky because I feel like I've kind of transitioned into another career that happens to be one that I really enjoy.
Yeah. Well, and it's like, I feel like you can make your own rules to a certain extent too, with like podcasting or producing or whatever. And it's, that's really great.
Yeah, I feel very lucky because it's hard enough to get one career that you enjoy, and I've been lucky enough to get another one. And then the band ended up breaking up a few years after I left, but I came back for the last tours, and then we stopped for like 3.5 years or something. And then crazily enough, of all years to come back, we came back in 2020, but we actually did it at the beginning of the year. So we toured in 2020, which is insane.
Yeah, that is really crazy. Wait, all through COVID?
No. Like literally, I got home like February 20th or something like that. Had been gone like pretty much all year at that point. And then, like 3 weeks later, everything shut down.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. I mean, it's so lucky to have just jammed that in.
I know.
Right before.
It was crazy timing. Because I remember initially like being like, man, we're going to go out in January. That seems like such a terrible time to
it's like, so it's like, little did you know.
Yeah. I'm so glad that's when it was. Because that would have been such, so, you know, there was so much build up to it. It had been, you know, in the works for a long time, and it got announced like 6 months ahead of time or something, and just like people were excited, we were excited, and if that would have been 3 months later.
That, I mean, it's like a nice, that's a nice little button on things too, to be like, we did another tour.
Yeah.
And now the world has shut down. The world quit this time instead of one of the band members. Everything quit. And that's great that you also can, like, you have the skills to go back and forth between two careers. Like, that's, who has that?
It's, yeah, again, I'm very lucky in that regard because I enjoy both of them. And, like, the touring thing, you know, we have, you know, fingers crossed, we're supposed to go out in January once again.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's exciting again now because we're not doing it full time. We're not going out 300 shows.
It's not such high pressure.
And, you know, everybody's old now and three of the guys have kids. And so, like, nobody's trying to be out doing this all of the time. So
yeah, 300 shows a year is exhausting if you have no one depending on you. I can't imagine if you were to try to do that with kids.
Yeah, no, I don't know how people do it. So, yeah, it's just like it's turned into like, you know, it's just this occasional thing we're going to do from time to time. And we'll see. Yeah.
Nice. That sounds really satisfying. Yeah. One last question for you. If your kid self, like 11-year-old Tony, could meet you, what do you think he would think?
Oh, man. I mean, I think I would definitely be pretty stoked on the things that I've gotten to do. Mm-hmm. And I don't know. It's like I'm gonna get real. Of I think it'd be a combination of like, oh, that's really cool that I've gotten to do so many of these things. Why aren't you happier?
I feel like that's a really common sentiment with people. I mean, you know, maybe we should all be playing in the dirt more or coloring more or something, whatever lights up our kid brains.
yeah you might be onto something.
Invest in some Legos maybe.
that's a bad door to open. I had that thought. I actually had that thought a few years ago. It's like, they are kind of fun, they're like little puzzles, and they are, you know, enjoyable to do as an adult. Still, but they are expensive and could get addicting. I think
when I play with my little cousins, I'm you would have to describe it as unwell, because I take it really seriously and I get controlling and I'm like, well, we got to do it this way. And they're like, relax, it's Legos. And I'm like, no, it's so important. Just totally ridiculous. Anyway, thank you so much for coming on. It was great to talk to you. And
thanks so much for having me.
Hear about stuff. Of course.
My pleasure.
Thank you so much for listening. Once again, that was Tony Thaxton. You can find him on Twitter and Instagram at Tony Thaxton. And I am Lisa Curry. You can find me on Twitter at Lisa_Curry and on Instagram at Olympian Lisa Curry. This weekend, I will be in Dubai doing shows. You can find announcements for those dates on my Instagram account if you are heading there. If you happen to be there, that's crazy to me. I'm really excited. I've never been to Dubai. I am told to go on a desert safari, and I'm going to try to do that even though it's going to be 106 degrees. Anyway, I'm really stoked for that. And if someone out there listening can make it to one of the shows, if you're out there, that would be incredible. And please say hi afterwards. If not, that's fine. I understand. It's kind of a long haul to go to a show. As usual, if you are enjoying the podcast, please like, subscribe, leave a nice little comment, and that would really make my day. All right. Thanks. We'll see you next week. Bye.